Welcome into Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. Appreciate all of you dialing us in. Got a great show lined up for you. But we're coming off the Labor Day weekend. Of course, we did not labor yesterday, but that doesn't stop the Alabama Crimson Tide and Nick Saban. And as we normally do, first day after the weekend, we play Nick Saban's pre-week. Now, going into Texas, we play his news conference in its entirety. And in the interest of consistency, we're going to do that again. Here's Nick from yesterday at this exact time.
Good. How's everybody today? Good. Just in review of the last game, players played hard in the game, competed well in the game. I thought we played, more physical, executed fairly well for the most part. But as in all first games, there's a lot of opportunity to correct things that we didn't get quite right. I think that it shows a lot in terms of how a team is approaching the season and how much you improve from the first game to the second game. And so the players having the right mindset relative to the challenges that we have internally on our team to get better is important to being able to get those things fixed. I think that games like this are something that players certainly look forward to. It's great that Jalen got recognized as SEC Offensive Player of the Week and Caleb, the Freshman of the Week. And, both of those players who played well and obviously got recognized for it, also have to continue to, look at the things that they did well and build on those things. And hopefully that confidence, helps them in the future. But also stay focused on doing the things that they need to do to improve in terms of their consistency and performance and execution. And I don't think there's anybody on our team who doesn't have something that they could actually improve on relative to their performance last week. So, Texas, I think everybody knows Sark is a really good coach. They've got a really good team. They've got a veteran team returning with, 10 starters on offense, 6 on defense. Really good skill players on offense, really good quarterback. Can throw the ball effectively. They make a lot of explosive plays. Worthy's an outstanding receiver. They've got good running backs. They've got a really good tight end. They're very good on defense. They play really good up front. They're physical. They played extremely well in the first game. And they're excellent on special teams. So this is a really good team all the way around. And it's going to be an opportunity for our team to sort of, where are we as a team? Where are you as a player? You're going to play against a really good player. That usually says, where am I as a player? And this is going to be a good barometer for us to find out, where are we as a team? And so we're going to focus on doing a great job of trying to get our guys to prepare to, play a great game and do a good job in terms of execution. I know it'll be an exciting game from a, fans' perspective, and we love that atmosphere and environment that they create. But I think one of the things that's really important for players is, can you stay focused on, what you need to do and not get affected by, a lot of the external factors.
Start with Chase.
Can you update us on Malachi Moore and Jalen Key, who you mentioned Saturday?
They're both day-to-day, so it's probably too early to tell what their circumstance will be. Probably be a couple days and we figure it out. But I don't think either guy has long-term issues, but it'll be interesting to see how they progress this week.
Up here, Charlie.
Another quick one. Emmanuel Henderson, you have an update on him?
He has a hip injury. It's going to probably be a few more weeks before he gets back into the swing of things, but hard to know exactly when. They'll do some rechecks on him here in the next week or two. And he was having a great fall camp, doing a great job on special teams, made a lot of progress as a receiver, so we'd love to get him back.
Go to Matt.
What do you think of how Caleb Downs played in his first game?
I think Caleb played, you know, really well. He plays fast. He's physical. I think that was a really challenging game, especially for a young player to have to play with all the formations and adjustments that we had to make. And I think he handled it really, really well.
Coach, I know every year is different, but that game last year in Austin, do you look back at all when you're prepping for this team and see, I know three went out in that game in yours, but do you look back at all with that game last year?
Well, I think, you know, you're always looking at what a team does technically, and it's always most interesting to see, you know, what was their philosophy of what they did technically to whether it was play defense against you or attack you offensively or what they did on special teams. So I think you use that information as a history of maybe what you might see again and other things that they did periodically, you know, that changed. So I don't think you look back on the game from a psychological standpoint as much as you do a technical standpoint.
Okay, Steven.
As he continues to push, Coach, how much growth has Kendrick Blackshaw made as a linebacker?
Yeah, he got in the game and played, you know, fairly well. And I think that the big thing we work on with, you know, Kendrick is consistency and performance. You know, when he's locked in and focused, he's plays really, really well. But you got to be able to do it all the time so that you develop, you know, the kind of confidence, trust in yourself and your teammates that you need to be a consistent player overall. But played well in the game when he got a chance to play.
When you and Greg Byrne discussed years ago about moving from neutral site openers to having more home-and-home games, for you, what was behind that or what kind of interested you in doing that?
Well, I think that one of the reasons that we did, you know, games away from home, whatever, what did you refer to them as? Neutral site games, okay. Neutral site games, good way to term them. Was, from a scheduling standpoint, it was a way to get a quality opponent on the schedule early on, which I thought had a lot of benefit in terms of your team developing in the offseason, looking forward to that game. Probably the Clemson game that we had, what was that, the second year we were here, probably did as much to sort of ignite the program in a way. But then after you do that for a while and you start having success and fans are going to playoff games and bowl games and different things, they don't have the same significance. And then to have more quality home games for the fans to see becomes a little bit more, I think, important. And I think that's kind of, in a nutshell, sort of why we transitioned back to this. Not to say that if we had an opportunity to play in a game somewhere in the future, we would. But I think that changes also with, you know, conference realignment and what could happen in the future with, you know, how many conference games you might be playing. So there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Stay right here with Kenny.
Two-part question. What did you see from players like Christian Story, Earl Little, Trey Amos when they were able to step in on Saturday? And then as far as the communication in the secondary, what did you see on tape and how important will that be against Texas on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it's really important all the time. And it's one thing that we're constantly harping on is to get good communication. And, you know, specifically about the players that you ask about, some of them played really well. Some of them have things that they could improve on. And, you know, sort of didn't play with the poise that you need to play with, maybe a little anxiety, first game, whatever. But we need all those guys to continue to develop and play well because, you know, right now Smitty's already down and you got two other guys that are, you know, not able to practice at least today, maybe someday in the near future. So it's important that we develop young players and that these guys have a chance to develop confidence, which I think just the fact that they got to play in the game should help them to some degree see what they need to improve on as well as build on the things that they did well.
Back with Jamie.
Hey, Coach, can you kind of share the feeling you get whenever you walk in that tunnel, you got your whole team behind you, and you step out on the field before a game? And by the way, your hair looks great this season.
You know, to me, it's always exciting, the challenge of playing a game. It's especially sometimes challenging when you play on the road and everybody's against you. And it's also a great feeling when you play at home and a lot of folks are for you and the enthusiasm's great. The players are excited about playing. And it's what you work for all week long. And, you know, I'm usually a little nervous, you know, sort of leading up to that. But sort of when we go out on the field, kind of all goes away and you start focusing on, okay, what's next? Here's the coin toss. All right, we're going to kick off. We're going to receive. And then it's one play at a time and all that kind of goes away. So, but it's exciting. I mean, there's no question about it. And certainly the great atmosphere that we have in Bryant-Denny Stadium contributes to that excitement when you're playing at home.
Katie?
How encouraged were you by turnovers on Saturday that the defense was able to force two and then the offense and special teams held onto the ball?
Well, you know, we got two turnovers. We had a third ball on the ground that we probably should have gotten. We didn't turn the ball over, which is a real plus offensively or on special teams. So you always want to have a positive turnover ratio, so we're plus two, so that's a positive thing. I thought there were times when we could have had a little better ball security, which we will point out to the players. And there were some other opportunities maybe where we could have got some balls out. So when you're emphasizing turnovers and not turning the ball over, those are always things that you're trying to focus on.
Two more to finish, Mike, in the day.
So what did you see from Tyler Buckner and Ty Simpson when they got into the game on Saturday?
Yeah, I think both guys handled the situation well. They executed fairly well. I think it's a good opportunity for both of them to be able to, you know, learn from some of the things that they did, get some really good game experience, both guys. And I thought they both did a good job.
What did Deontay Lawson show you on Saturday in terms of leading the defense and communicating everything?
Yeah, well, you know, he's a bright guy. He's a signal caller. Didn't disappoint us at all, you know, in a game on Saturday, and we were getting a lot of multiples and a lot of different things. But he did a good job. He had a good game. He played well. He was productive. So, you know, I think it's important that we keep, you know, getting that kind of performance because, you know, linebacker is such an important position in setting the front, stopping the run, but also, you know, getting out on run pass and being able to match the patterns the way you need to. And he's certainly a bright guy and has done that extremely well.
Thanks, Coach.
We good? All right. Thank you.
All right. That was Nick Saban speaking yesterday to the media. Matt, quick reaction from you.
I think it's pretty much standard stuff after you blow out your opponent. And, you know, he scouted Texas and paid compliments to Sark, as he should. It's a good football team. And moving forward, we're going to talk a lot more about that. Somebody's going to have to call in, or Justin may know, but I'm a little confused about this whole hair deal. Am I missing something there, Lark?
I'm confused, too. I thought that the question was actually really good. Just asking Nick what he feels at this point in his life when he's walking through the tunnel, and for him, before kickoff, and for him to say that he's actually a little nervous is something I've never heard him say before. It's great. I love questions that just humanize the individual, right? And I love it when Nick Saban makes us feel more relatable to him.
And it was a good question, but I still don't understand the end of the question comment.
Apparently his hair looked good yesterday. Okay. Yeah.
All right. That's important. There may be something more to that, and perhaps I'm missing. I'm just going to allow for that chance and move on to our first break. Mike Rodak will join us at the bottom of the hour. Stan White's coming along in the second hour. What in the world happened to Clemson? All coming up on Big Noon Sports.
Time. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny this afternoon, the high today 91. Fair tonight with a low at 71. Tomorrow and Thursday, partially sunny both days. The chance of widely scattered, mostly afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Highs between 88 and 91. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 88 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Indeed, this is Big Noon Sports. Matt, Lars, Justin, the gang is all here. Hope everyone... Lars, you have a good Labor Day? I know I did, because I did not labor from sunrise to sunset and all points on the perimeter.
I actually wrote for about 12 hours, a massive stream of consciousness for a book proposal, and hopefully I'll be able to have some news on that later this week. But, yeah, I mean, I had a wonderful weekend. My 6-year-old twin girls had to explain to me and show me how to watch the Alabama game here in Birmingham because I have Spectrum. I couldn't figure it out. Literally, Matt, Autumn and Farah figured it out for me. They're more techno savvy than I am. But what a performance by Jalen Milroe. What a performance. I mean, we should have seen this coming. But, I mean, that is story 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for me for the game. And we're going to dig deep into everything about what we saw and what to expect moving forward, especially on Saturday against Texas in one of the most anticipated games in recent memory in Tuscaloosa.
One of the critics of said quarterback, who, by the way, was the SEC Offensive Player of the Week, responsible for 5 touchdowns, has been one of our callers at 205-342-9904. And Joseph joins us on Big Noon Sports. Joseph, how you doing? Hello, Joseph. Well, I know we did keep him on hold because of the Saban news conference, but we've lost him. Perhaps he wants to call back. But
Matt, your takeaway on Milroe.
Well, the one thing, and let me start with the Milroe thing with Tommy Rees and how they got him indoctrinated in the game. Run, then throw short passes, and then eventually let's go vertical. And I think that's the thing that impressed me the most. Because his 2 touchdown passes were perfect. I mean, perfect. The one to Nye Black is just unbelievable. Wow, what a good initial performance he had, too. So I think we could expect him to run the football, although his first touchdown run was incredible because he turned lemons into lemonade. But he just got more confident throughout the game. As it progressed, he really wanted to throw the deep ball, and he did. And he was on target, and that was an incredible thing to say. I say that with some caution. Those are Blue Raiders, not the Longhorns. I don't know that Texas is, they're not Alabama on defense, but they're pretty good. They're going to be better than MTSU. But overall, it's an A-plus start for Milroe in my book.
My immediate thought was a more athletic, dynamic version of Jalen Hurts as a freshman. And I just thought there's so much potential here. Finished the game 13 for 18 passing, 194 yards in through the air, 64 yards rushing, five total touchdowns. But Matt, most important, zero turnovers. And according to Pro Football Focus, which is a group that I really trust, Milroe didn't even have a turnover-worthy play, which they defined as a pass that has a high percentage chance to be intercepted or a poor job of taking care of the ball and fumbling. So he took a total of 45 snaps and really just one or two sort of bad plays in those 45 snaps. And, you and I talked on Friday extensively about this when we were at Innisfree, that we both thought Milroe obviously was going to start. And we thought, you know, that he was the guy, and that Coach Saban was going to play him the entire first half and get him back out there for the second, for the third quarter. So he goes through the experience of sort of cooling down at halftime and then warming back up and playing and taking snaps in the third quarter. And I think it's pretty clear that the quarterback competition is over in my mind. Do you agree with that? Is that your assessment as well?
Yeah, and let me reach out here and hand you a cold beer, okay? Because you called it. You said he'd play the entire first half and at least the first series in the third quarter, and he did just that. I thought the two Tylers looked pretty good, to be honest with you. They both ran for a touchdown. I mean, that's pretty cool. So, yes, there's no question in my mind that he will go into the Texas game, and this week he will get, 80% of the snaps?
Yeah.
And he will be very, very prepared for Sark and the Longhorns as they come into Bryant-Denny Stadium, which is just huge. The whole nation's buzzing about it right now.
Yeah, it's going to be a thrilling game, and I think Alabama and Colorado and Deion Sanders are sort of the two main stories in the country coming out of week one, and Jalen Milroe and his performance. I mean, I can't remember, honestly, just ever seeing a quarterback with his running ability. I mean, he's the best athlete on the field, Matt.
You know, when he turned it up the far boundary on that busted play, I didn't think he was going to make the end zone. Well, was Matt ever wrong? And he made several other athletic plays, but I think we all knew his capability there. But what really lit me up is that his accuracy on vertical passes, and he's really going to need that against Texas and throughout the year. I was really, really impressed with him. Caleb Downs was incredible. Led the team in tackles, both solo and total. And this guy was literally playing high school football a year ago. What a smart player. And speaking of athletic, he's not bad in that area either.
Yeah, he is the future of that secondary, and he is special.
Wow, sorry, I thought Arno and the rest of the secondary played great. McKinstry and Malachi Moore. How about the UAB transfer for Key? I know a couple of those guys are banged up a little bit, but word is I think they'll be practicing later this week, if not today. All right, you're listening to Big Noon Sports. When we get back, we'll be talking to Mike Rodak from AL.com and everything Alabama from his perspective right here on Big Noon Sports.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Hey, this is Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa, located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around, and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world-class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world-renowned cigar and spirits destination.
Weekday mornings at 6 a.m., the Martin Houston Show.
Join us on tomorrow as we continue our conversation about Texas and Alabama. It's a TNT tied in Texas. We'll be looking at Would You Rather. We'll also have a wild card version of the show. hey, you want to talk about Texas and what they need to do to win? We'll talk about Bama and their keys to victory as well.
Catch the Martin Houston Show from 6 to 7 weekday mornings on Tide 100.9.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Back on Big Noon Sports, Matt Coulter, along with Bart Sanders and Justin Jones, is driving the ship today, and also being joined as he is weekly, AL.com's Mike Rodak. Mike, I hope you had a good Labor Day, although I'm sure you were in Tuscaloosa and you were taking your notes and doing your interviews. But everybody's talking about what Jalen was able to do this past weekend, and it was just a notch below spectacular in my book. Instead of asking you to review the positive, did you see anything negative?
There was not a whole lot. There was one throw early in the game. I think it was Kobe Prentice running across the middle of the field, and Milroe had plenty of time and, you know, kind of uncorked a pass that was pretty low. I think Prentice tried to catch it, but he didn't. And that's one of those where you're like, all right, you know, you go against a better opponent, you got to clean up some of those where there's time in the pocket, open receiver, you got to be able to hit him. The bad snap wasn't his fault. Obviously made a great play out of that. There was that one play where he rolled to his right and there was a defender jumping up in front of him and he kind of threw it into his arms and, you know, to some degree, probably lucky it wasn't picked off. But those are really the only things that come to mind. I mean, there was, I think, some talk on the broadcast, the two sacks that he gave up. I know there seemed to be some issues with the running back pass protection, but I think Jordan Rogers, as a former QB on the broadcast, was also saying that Milroe needed to change some things at the line. So maybe that's part of it. Better than, yeah, I think a lot of people were expecting, and that's obviously a good thing for him.
What specifically did you see improvement-wise from last year to game one from Milroe?
You know, I think the downfield passing is probably the place to start, and statistically his downfield passing in his limited sample size last year was not great, pretty low completion percentage. And, you know, he had the three long touchdowns in this game, 29, 47, 48 yards. And you can discount some of that. And, you know, Nick Saban did to some degree as well by saying that's Middle Tennessee defense. They play very aggressively. They're big little. They create negative plays. They also give up a lot of big plays. We saw that. And, you know, he also made the point after the game that it's one thing to get separation against their defensive backs, and we're not talking about very highly recruited guys, but it's going to be more of a struggle to get separation against better teams. So, and there was some technical mistakes too. I think that secondary made, the one where Saban was breaking down to play with Chris Stewart after the game, and the Nye Black touchdown where the safety was taking some wrong steps, and I think Saban called it a kiss of death for the safety. So, there were some things where they took advantage of Middle Tennessee, but, you know, I think some good throws in Jalen Milroe's part to complete those plays when those plays were available to him.
Mike, one of the things I noticed is there was improved play on both sides of the line at the point of attack. Would you agree?
For the most part, you know, I think offensively, the offensive line came out really aggressively. I remember even first play, Caden Proctor, and I think it was Booker next to him, were blocking a guy 10 yards down the field, push him into the ground, and Proctor gets up after the whistle and is flexing and jumping up and down and celebrating. That's what they wanted. They wanted to come out of the gate and kind of do what they had talked about all offseason. And by Booker's own admission, when he was on, you know, the radio this week, by Saban's own admission on his show, they kind of lost that a little bit in the second quarter, some of that edge. And they got it back after halftime, and that kind of put the game away. For Jason McClellan, I think it was 39 yards on 10 carries. That's not what you would expect against an inferior opponent, if you will. Justice Haynes, I think, had more success later in the game when, you know, he was running against them. So, there's definitely room for improvement on the offensive line and in the running game. And defensively, you know, there's a lot of pressure that they created. I think that's something we're all looking for, is how do they replace what Will Anderson gave them? And it was a group effort between Turner and Braswell and Quandarius Robinson, who's someone who I don't think people have talked about a whole lot, but right now he's their number three pass rusher and an important player for this defense.
we spent 8 months talking about the quarterback competition. In your mind, has it been resolved? Is this Jalen Milroe's team?
No, I think it'll be premature. I know there's a lot of excitement over the game on Saturday. I don't think that's settled it in Nick Saban's mind. I think it's certainly they're happy with everything they've seen out of him, but it's just one game and everything could change if things do not go well against Texas. So I don't think there's any guarantees for Jalen Milroe. It's obviously been something that Saban stressed, and Tyler Buchner seems to have come on strong within the past week or two, to where it seems like he's now the number two quarterback. He was the second guy into that game and he led a touchdown drive and he scored a touchdown himself with his legs. And even Ty Simpson had a pretty clean drive where he had a touchdown himself. So the other guys are not going away. That's always what Saban wanted. He wanted the competition to continue and the other guys not just to give up. And I don't think they have. And, I think it's a situation too where no matter what happens against Texas, Miller could have another good game. I think we're going to see more than one quarterback the following week, next week against South Florida.
Were you surprised that it was Buchner and not Simpson to come in at the number two quarterback slot?
I was surprised when the news kind of came out Friday night into Saturday morning. There were some reports, about that. And, Tony Sakalas from Tide Illustrated and Chris Lowe from ESPN, I'll give him credit for that. They nailed that one. As far as Buchner having a better week of practice than Ty Simpson. And that's kind of the opposite of where things were through most of August. And, Buchner obviously was in a tougher position coming in late as a summer transfer and having to learn the offense and learn the players around him. And I think that, probably contributed to him having a slower start in fall camp. Whereas Ty Simpson's been here almost 2 years now, and you would expect probably more out of him at this point. It just didn't seem like he had a good week of practice last week, and I think did better in the game. And Nick Saban, when I asked him yesterday, said both quarterbacks did a good job. But it's a really interesting situation for Ty Simpson. As a former five-star recruit who, as things stand today, is their third quarterback. I don't think that's chiseled into stone, but if that remains the case through the end of the year, it's pretty hard to see him still being here, past December, let's say.
Yeah, that was my first thought too, when Buchner trotted onto the field and not Simpson. Quarterback position aside, what was your biggest surprise? Whether a position group or a player?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a few minor things here and there. I think overall, I was still expecting them to use more wide. Plays into the Corey Brooks situation. I was expecting more of the three and four wide receiver sets. I think Tommy Rees, as much as he was known for the tight ends at Notre Dame, still had a lot of receivers at his disposal coming into Alabama. And I've talked about that. He's trying to use all these guys and. They certainly had some three wide receiver sets. I didn't see too many of the four wide receiver sets. And yeah, just Corey Brooks was surprising not to see him in the first half. And, certainly seems to be discipline related there. But really leaning into the tight ends. And I guess that probably doesn't surprise a whole lot of people, but, a lot of two tight end sets using four different tight ends really with the first team offense. And, they really like what they have at that position. It's a versatile, deep group of guys. And, I don't think it surprises too many people based on his history at Notre Dame, but it does surprise me just because I thought Rees was going to lean more into the receivers. Now he's at Alabama and has the talent there.
Do you know any more about the Brooks thing that you can tell us?
I don't. It was a little bit interesting. I was the one who asked the question after the game, and I didn't watch the TV broadcast. I don't know exactly what they said about it. But that's, Saban for a second seemed like he was going to answer the question, and then sort of thought about it, and then he was respectful. I will note that in saying, I love and appreciate you guys and the job you have to do, but I'm not going to say why. And even after all that, Ja'Cory Brooks was still on the schedule as one of the two players to talk to us yesterday, which is surprising given Alabama typically in those situations will not have those players out in front of the camera, and that's actually what ended up happening. We waited 45 minutes, and instead of Ja'Cory Brooks, Jalen Milroe came out. So I'm not too sure exactly, where things stand there. I don't think it's a major thing. I think if it was like, Jaleel Billingsley or Jai Hall, I think Nick Saban will come out and say it. Like, I think he was pretty vocal about those guys, but he seems more restrained in this case in terms of what he wants to say. So I just don't get the sense that it's quite as serious.
Here's what I heard on the inside, okay? I heard that he doesn't like motel beds, and this is crazy, and he decided he was going to go home and sleep in his own bed. I don't know if either one of you would confirm or deny that, but it's a rather interesting take. He certainly needed to be penalized for it, but then again, I'm not real fond of hotel beds anymore either. But I'm just floating that out there and don't expect any comment, but I will follow up with wide receiver talk or a question for you, Mike Rodak. Did anybody step up? I guess you'd say Bond did. Obviously, he ended up being the leading receiver.
Yeah, I mean, Bond, I think going into it, you're probably looking at a top three guy at least, and, you know, the best of their sophomore receivers. So not terribly surprising to see him where he was. To me, it was Kobe Prentice. Being the fourth guy on the field was somewhat surprising given, he was a starter to begin last season. He kind of dropped off by the end of the year and, was really third team at the beginning of fall camp when we had the open practice. So, it seems like he's gotten better the last couple weeks. And, maybe part of that is Emmanuel Henderson being out with his hip injury. Maybe Henderson would have gotten more looks, but right now it seems like the top three receivers are Burton, Bond, and Benson, and then where Ja'Cory Brooks fits into that is still not totally clear. Maybe he's your number four, and then after that you're talking about Prentice or Law or Henderson if he's healthy.
Nick Saban obviously doesn't want to tip his hand at all to Texas. How vanilla do you think he kept the offense and the defense?
I think it's always a consideration. You're not throwing out trick plays or anything too exotic. At the same time, I mean, you're still trying to win that game. I think you still respect what Middle Tennessee is able to do, especially defensively with some of their pressures and stunts. Like, you still, you have to combat that as an offense. You can't just let Jalen Milroe get run over because you're trying to run something vanilla. So it's somewhere in between. And at the same time, there's not, even if you have 50 plays on film for Alabama, there's still a lot that's not out there of Tommy Rees and Jalen Milroe and how they want to do things. So, there's a lot of room there, I think, for them to hide stuff.
The Longhorns are coming to Bryant-Denny Stadium for a 6 o'clock kickoff. We'll talk more about that game. And also Clemson and what happened with Duke. My word. And the talk of the town, the toast of the town is Dion Primetime. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll recap Alabama, Middle Tennessee State. We'll recap the weekend of college football. We'll set the stage for Alabama, Texas. Coming up, 2 o'clock Tuesday, right here on The Game, Tide 100.9, the home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa. The Game with Ryan Fowler. Weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tide 100.9. And streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. Mostly sunny this afternoon, the high today 91. Fair tonight with a low at 71. Tomorrow and Thursday, partially sunny both days. The chance of widely scattered, mostly afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Highs between 88 and 91. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 89 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hope everybody had a fantastic Labor Day. And thank you for dialing us in. And you can also dial us up at 205-342-9904. Lots to talk about in the world of college football, certainly with Alabama's opener and convincing win over Middle Tennessee State University. But there were some other things that happened over the weekend that are certainly worth discussing, Lars. And we'll go into much greater detail on the other side of the hour about Auburn. I thought they looked really, really good, and the Hugh Freeze era is definitely underway, in my opinion. but a couple of others that really, really stuck out. Everybody starts with Deion, and rightfully so. They are a 20-point dog going into Fort Worth and won it. And in my opinion, they got two Heisman Trophy candidates right now. And Deion called them out and said, we take our receipts. Your thoughts on what prime time did?
It was impressive. It was very impressive. Very strong performance by Deion's son, the quarterback. And they made plays when they had to make plays. I found his comments after the game extremely off-putting and unnecessary, and very much look at me, look at me, look at me. But we'll see what happens when my boys from Nebraska roll into Boulder on Saturday. Nebraska did lose the game. Obviously, we talked about that on Friday against Minnesota. But we'll see what happens there. I have very strong feelings about all of that, and we'll get into that throughout the week. This has one hit wonder feeling to me about Colorado, but. We'll see. Let me interrupt
you right there. Are you like me right now? And I just want the Cornhuskers to stuff them. You know,
is that? I think
a lot of the nation's thinking.
I have to understand
what he did, but be quiet.
I have to recuse myself almost from this whole conversation. I wanted to ask you, where does the country sit on this game against Nebraska going into Colorado?
Oh, I think the country thinks that based on what's happened in Nebraska over the last few years, and then the big win at TCU, played the national championship last year, I think they fully expect the Buffs to just kick the Huskers' butt, and I don't think that's going to happen at all. Not trying to take anything away from what Colorado did. However, that seemed to me to be a broken TCU team.
Yeah.
And I think that had something to do with it. But again, every time you say something in their favor, the Deion lovers are going to accuse you, not giving him any respect. Well, earn it. And if you're that good, you don't have to say it. You don't have to challenge everybody. But I'll be honest with you, this is long since Colorado. I didn't like the way he acted when he was at Florida State, showing up in limos, smoking cigars, because he had a baseball contract. I know he helped the Atlanta Braves in a great way, but I would have rather seen somebody else in that uniform, although he did help us win it. So, anyway, there you got that. How about,
I didn't understand that he basically said the entire nation doubted him. I don't recall us ever saying that at all. That has not been the national narrative about Colorado. It has been, hey, this is a grand experiment going on at Colorado and at Auburn, and let's see how it plays out. It's fascinating. I mean, we're all interested because you're just taking, players from all across the country. But then, he brings in race. Like, why are you doing that? Why? I don't understand. He said 75% black. Okay. How many college football teams in the country are 75% African American?
That's the same thing I thought.
I mean, it is just nonsense.
It is amazing that he was able to pull all those guys together. I mean, with all the transfers and all the people that left and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. He's got talent. They got talent. Yeah. They got talent on that team. But they also have issues. I mean, don't forget that they surrendered 41 points to not a very good team. TCU played in the national final, right, last year. they got stomped. I mean, it's a broke, to me, it's like we've seen throughout the past how Alabama has broken teams. And I think Georgia broke TCU. And look, they lost their quarterback. They lost so much. And it is a vastly different team than last year. And so my feeling is that it's been an incredible overreaction to one game and how Deion Sanders has, you know, pulled a rabbit out of the hat and all that. But we'll see.
Well, I think he's trying to continue and, you know, grow the us against the world theme. And,
I know.
It's after the game. That's definitely, in my opinion, what he's trying to do.
That's like it's the oldest motivational trick in the book, but it works, right? It works when you can convince your players that nobody thinks you can do something, and then you go out and do it. I get it, but I don't know. It's kind of tired in my mind.
All right, Lars, did somebody get the bus number, the license plate of Florida State Seminoles? Because, man, in Orlando, they in the second half particularly, I thought at the end of the half that LSU was going to go ahead and start putting the chairs on the bus. But it was the exact opposite. The Noles, Mike Norvell, man, they look really good.
Yeah, Mike Norvell has done a wonderful job with the roster reconstruction and going out in the transfer portal and just getting guys from all over the country that fit exactly what he wants to do. And wow, I mean, that actually, I think Florida State probably was the most impressive team in the country in week one. And if I had a vote in the writers poll and the AP poll, I would put Florida State number one. I mean, there's no reason that they shouldn't be. They thoroughly thumped LSU in the second half. I mean, it just it reminded me of what like Alabama has done to teams, right? In second halves of games, like their physicality, they stuffed everything down their throat, and their quarterback is special. Oh my goodness, is he good? Just makes right decisions. And now we remember why Mike Norvell was, such a sought after coach, three years ago. And, I think just based on that performance, and this is going to sound like an overreaction, just like as I was just criticizing overreactions, but based on their performance and based on Clemson's performance, I almost would pencil Florida State into the college football playoffs right now. This is a good team. Jordan Travis, he is special. He just made play after play after play. And, I just can't, to me, he was the single most impressive player in week one, of college football. Would you agree with that? Or was there some other player that really stuck out to you?
The Jamur Sanders for, Colorado.
Yeah.
And then Travis Hunter got played. There were 165 snaps, and he played 148.
Yeah.
Man. And then he had a pick and, what, three touchdown catches?
Yeah. And did you see the fans taunting him before the game?
No.
Oh, yeah. It was the guys, like, in the corner of the end zone. A couple of TCU students were just yelling and at the top of their lungs, like, you know, you're nothing, you're worthless. And it so happened that he made that incredible interception right in front of them. And the camera goes, so there's a video that went viral of these kids yelling at him, and then their reaction when he intercepts the ball and he just looks up at him. It's priceless. Isn't it awesome that college football is back? Oh my gosh. Absolutely. What a great weekend. Yeah. How fun was that?
Your NFL guys are coming up this weekend too. What are you going to do with yourself?
I'm going to go to Buffalo Wild Wings on Highway 280 in Birmingham to watch the Bengals at 12 at Bengals Corner. Come and hang out with us.
Hey, speaking of hanging out, we'll do it again this Friday leading up to the Texas game. But we'll be at Innisfree this Friday, noon until 2, with their Lucky Lunch special and a lot of our guests. We're going to have some surprise folks popping by. But that's the place to be on Friday afternoons as we continue Big Noon Sports on a Tuesday afternoon. We'll be right back.
WTUG HD2 Northport and W265 CG Tuscaloosa. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports on a Tuesday. Short a day because of Labor Day. I hope you all had a great Labor Day weekend and went to the lake, went to the beach, spent a lot of time with your family. Yeah, it was a good weekend for Lars and myself as well. Of course, we're talking about Alabama's big win over Middle Tennessee State University. One note from that game, I guess I read this correctly. You remember last year there was a lot of hullabaloo about where Alabama's band was going to be at Texas because I think they stuck them in the heated upper deck. Mm-hmm. Apparently Alabama's going to twist and turn and do that around to the Longhorns, too. Did you read that?
No, I didn't see that. But, turnabout's fair play, right? I love the word hullabaloo, by the way. Well done.
There used to be a television show when I was quite young on called Hullabaloo, and it was one of those kind of rock. It was kind of it was a little bit like American Bandstand, but anyway.
Speaking of music, real quick, yeah. Matt, your thoughts on the passing of Jimmy Buffett. We are both such big music people. That's one of the many things that binds us together as friends. And, I never saw Jimmy Buffett. I wasn't as into Jimmy Buffett as a lot of people, but I certainly respected Jimmy Buffett and was very familiar with his songwriting and his impact and his influence on so many. I mean, he represented something so big, right? It was almost like a way of life. And he was such a beautiful composer and songwriter, lyricist, and it just broke my heart to hear that he passed away.
A lot of parrot heads are in mourning, and I think it was evident that even in the second half, the Alabama fans started singing Margaritaville, which shows you the impact. He was unique, and I mean it in the very sense of the word. I don't know another artist that had his genre and excelled at it so much. And I know everybody likes the Margaritaville and the Cheeseburger in Paradise, but go listen to Come Monday, his first big hit. It's just a piece of art. It is beautiful. But he also wrote books of great success. He was incredibly smart as a businessman. Lars, he was worth almost $1 billion when he passed away.
Yeah, that's incredible.
$1 billion. But if you will allow, I'll share you a really cool Buffett story. I have to remember exactly what year it was. It was the mid-90s or something. I was an extra for the movie Cobb, which was filmed at Rickwood Field. If you've ever seen the movie, it's a very dark but very accurate movie on a great baseball player but a horrible man. And one of the examples they showed, which was true, is that Cobb once got tired of being heckled by a one-armed man in the crowd, and Cobb jumped over the fence, ran up into the crowd, and beat the crap out of this one-armed man. Well, they had that in the movie. The one-armed man was played by Jimmy Buffett. And that was really pretty cool. After our shooting that day, a big flatbed truck pulled up right along third base and parked it. They pulled a canopy off of it. There were speakers and a stool and a guitar. Buffett jumped up there, and for the extras, for the cast, for the crew, for everybody that was a part of Cobb that day, he got up on stage and just played and played and played. They pulled kegs out and put him at home playing third base, and he didn't have to do that. He just did it because he was Jimmy Buffett. What an intimate setting to hear Jimmy Buffett. It was fantastic. So, yeah. I'm not a Parrothead. I wouldn't go out and buy the albums and listen to it front and back, but I like what I like, and I really like his lifestyle, and that's what he sold, Lars, you know?
Yeah.
What's Margaritaville all about? Shot tequila, man.
Yeah, and, you know, every time, I'm not a beach guy at all. Like, no, I grew up in Nebraska, for goodness sakes. Like, we're very landlocked in Nebraska, and I don't do beaches. I'm not a person who wants to bake in the sun. However, every time I would go down, with my kid's mother to the beach, and we went all the time because she has a place down at Panama City. It's like I want to listen to Jimmy Buffett, you know, and just chill out and have a drink on the beach and have an umbrella in it, you know, a little umbrella and look out at the water. But definitely like underneath some shade. But yes, I love Jimmy Buffett. I love him. And sad to hear that he passed away. But, you know, the true measure of a man or a woman, I think, is the impact that you have on others. And by that standard, you know, Jimmy Buffett stands shoulder to shoulder with very few. And just what a rich life, you know, a life well lived, a life of meaning and content and impact. And you know, what more can you ask? You know, like, we're all gonna you know, get to the end at some point, and you want to be remembered the way that people are remembering Jimmy Buffett today.
I agree. Well said. Yeah, there is a beach in heaven that's having a party, and Buffett's he's going to be leading it. But it's a tough deal. And then I saw where Gary Wright, I don't know if you remember him from Dreamweaver fame from back in the 70s, Spooky Tooth, he passed away. I saw that this morning. So sometimes it seems like they do come in threes. So, all right, I wanted to ask you about this because we're going to talk a lot about what Auburn did on Saturday. But just an overall thought or two, Lars, from your perspective, has the running of the clock after first downs, except with 2 minutes remaining in the first or second half, has that made a big difference?
It has. I hate it. Every coach hates it. It is changing the nature of the game because it limits the amount of possessions you get. And so you, as a coach, you have to change your tactics, your strategy, your approach, your game plan. And I think it caught some coaches by surprise, frankly. I mean, you heard Chip Kelly. Like, the UCLA coach, he just went off about it. I think it was at halftime. And, you know, Shane Beamer, he was really upset. You know, I was surprised, actually, that North Carolina handled South Carolina the way they did. You know, but Shane Beamer was upset. He said he was talking about the chain gang crew. He was upset with the limited amount of possessions, but also with the chain gang crew, and that they were eating hot dogs, and it delayed the second half kickoff because they were planning to do an onside kick, and the fact that they were eating hot dogs, like, it became a big thing on Twitter or X, whatever Elon Musk calls it now. But yeah, I absolutely despise it, Matt. And because again, it the unintended consequence, I believe, of this rule is that it has fundamentally changed how coaches must approach each and every game. You agree or do you like it?
I don't know. I think I'm going to have to give it a couple more weeks, but and I want to see data.
Yeah.
Is it actually costing each team a possession per game? You're right. If it's something that large, then that does affect your football team. But I had not read the thing about the hot dogs and the chain gang.
Yeah, it was
Can
quite.
You imagine cute. If that had happened in the Alabama Clemson game when Nick Saban was getting ready. Of course, that wasn't to start the half, but man,
yeah,
somebody would have a hot dog in someplace else. All right,
well, I mean, Shane, and it takes a lot. Like you know that I'm close with Shane. And it takes a lot to get him fired up. And, man, he was PO'd after the game. And I know he's disappointed because they got beat by North Carolina. And overall, it was not a great weekend for the SEC. Boy, the, you know, people in the ACC are puffing their chests out. But, you know, we'll see. It's a long season. Week one.
It is. Hey. Auburn's got to go all the way to California this weekend. Stan White will talk about the performance versus the Minutemen and more when we get back on Big News Sports.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Hey, this is Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa, located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world renowned cigar and spirits destination.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama, we are here treating patients from every generation across the United States and from around the world. We're here for the rookies and the dreamers trying to make a name for themselves. We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer. We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping the next generation of legends.
We are here for you,
aggressively pursuing victory over injury.
Learn more at andrewsportsmedicine.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny this afternoon, the high today 91. Fair tonight with a low at 71. Tomorrow and Thursday, partially sunny both days. The chance of widely scattered, mostly afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Highs between 88 and 91. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 90 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Go inside the Alabama Crimson Tide with the Gary Harris Show.
Coming up on the Wednesday edition of the Gary Harris Show on Tide 100.9 FM, we'll talk plenty of SEC and college football. You know that's happening with Texas coming to Alabama this weekend. But also, we'll have the NASCAR report with Matt Coulter, your phone calls as well. All that and more on the Gary Harris Show.
Catch the Gary Harris Show Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
365, 24/7. You'll find road and utility crews, tow truck, law enforcement, and first responders working along Alabama's roadway.
We're making improvements and helping our communities stay connected.
We're working hard to make sure you're safe on the road. Now we need your help to make sure we're safe too.
Alabama's move over law requires you to move over a lane when you see flashing lights on the roadside. And if you can't safely move over, please slow down.
Visit drivesafealabama.org, brought to you by the Alabama Department of Transportation, Alabama Broadcasters Association, and this station.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Just shy of a week into September, so we'll be doing this for the next 5 months. Lars, we'll try to get Stan White in here in just a minute, but just really troubling news out of Athens, Georgia again. A staffer, is Jarvis Jones, who's an outstanding linebacker and played in the NFL for 4 or 5 years, arrested for reckless driving. And this is really, the numbers here just make me cringe. He was clocked at 86 miles per hour in a 40 mile per hour zone. Kirby Smart said, we will deal with this internally. That's all I can say about this right now. But he's got to be just wringing his hands. I mean, good grief. 86 and a 40? I mean, how brash can you possibly be?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, especially in light of the fact that at least a dozen Georgia players have been charged with moving violations or speeding since the team won the national championship in January. And, we know about the tragedy in which Devin Willock, offensive lineman and a staff member, Chandler LaCroix, were killed in a car wreck in which the police alleged that that Jalen Carter, who defensive lineman who went really high in the NFL draft to the Eagles, was racing them. I mean, it's mind-boggling. And Kirby Smart, I've thought about this quite a bit. It's gotten to the point that it's a zero-tolerance MFing policy. You speed, you're gone. Simple as that. I mean, because clearly you have a staff member who is breaking the law in an extravagant fashion that hasn't learned from everything that has happened, including the deaths of two people. There has to be zero tolerance. Kirby, come on. You have enough talent on this team that you can afford to lose some player who is a knucklehead or a coach, a staff member like Jarvis Jones and doing this 24 hours, less than 24 hours before the season opener. What the heck is going on, Matt? I don't get it. I just don't get it.
You have to employ zero tolerance, like you just said, and said, if you do this,
you're gone.
Employment line. Yeah.
Yes.
Or you're not playing ever again.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that in a vacuum, right? If all things being equal, if there were no previous incidents, no, you shouldn't get kicked off the team for speeding. And maybe it's he was going 46 miles per hour over the speed limit.
And I'm not trying to make light of this incident, but I did note that he was in 84 Buick Regal.
Yeah, I know. I was like, what's going on with that?
Oh, he rebuilt it, you know, and it had to be.
Oh, yeah. So he's got the thunderous engine.
Yeah, that's something that's really popular.
Is that street racing going on? Maybe. Who knows?
Sounds like it. But anyway.
Why else would you be going 86 and a 40? Sorry. 40. Yep.
And a 40. I mean, that's got to be like downtown. That's crazy. People, even at night, it's just so dangerous. All right. Let's talk about something much less dangerous and actually very, very popular. Stan White, one of the most popular quarterbacks to ever play, one of the most popular players to ever play at Auburn. He joins us and had been the color analyst for 22 years, I think. I've got that right. But Stan, were you able to go tailgate with your family this weekend?
I did a little bit, yes. Not a whole lot. I had to do a segment on the radio with the guys around 1, and then they did like a pregame recognition before the game down there. So it was a little bit of a subdued tailgating experience, but I nonetheless had a great time. And you know, I was listening, you know, not to change completely the subject off of this, but I was listening to your previous segment, and you know, those 84 Regals are pretty hot cars back in our day, Matt.
You are so right. You know what they are?
That may be a good promotion. He was going 86 and 84 Regal. Man, that's pretty impressive.
You know, if you remember the movie Roadhouse?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what, what's his name, Dalton bought when he got there and he drove around. I believe it was an 84. Oh, yeah. It was a Regal. But anyway, okay.
One of the greatest low-budget films ever, right?
It stood the test of time for sure.
Stan, if you could have any car, American-made car, right now, what would you choose?
Oh man, that's a tough one right there. American-made car. Well, you know, I drive a Ford. I drive a Raptor right now. And of course, that's that does stuff.
Bad,
you know,
bad
for many
vehicle
years
right there.
With
that's what Tom Brady drives.
I love my Raptor now. But you know, there's a lot of great cars. You know, my first ever car, and I'm going to go against Ford, it was a Camaro Z28.
Oh,
my
wow.
First ever. And it was actually a 1984 model Camaro Z28.
I
don't know if I would have it. Now, I'm not saying I would have that right now, but that was my first ever car. Yeah, and it only ran hot 4 times on the way to the beach. So, you know, you had to time it out. You had to stop, you know, around the Georgiana exit, and then you stop in Andalusia, you know. And so, you had it timed out. If we can make it here, we can cool it down a little bit. But, yeah, those were the days. But, no, I like my Raptor. I enjoy it. My wife loves it when I come in the neighborhood, and it's on that Baja, you know, exhaust. And so, it's you know, you can hear it from 6 miles away.
Stan, what was it like for you watching the game and not be in front of a microphone? Was it an odd experience, kind of surreal? What were your feeling?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I went and visited the guys in the booth at halftime and you know, caught up with them for a good bit, and you know, and I was in, you know, I was. It was different. I wasn't as into the game, clearly, you know, as if you were broadcasting a game. I love watching it. I love being a fan. I love enjoying it. But I just enjoyed, you know, socializing with the people around me and of course, my family and my kids were there. And then we were just kind of taking that all in. This is the first time that we have, as a family, has ever been to a game in 20. Well, my oldest is 15 years old, so ever. It was an awesome weekend. I was very humbled by the recognition, and it was not your ordinary opening day crowd, because obviously a few Freeze and new staff, new regime, and it was just a great day down at Auburn, and I enjoyed it immensely. This will be the first game. I'm not going to California, so this will be the first game that I have missed. Somebody told me I have to go add it up, but I think it was over 281 Saturdays in a row. Over 22 years. So I will not be in Berkeley this weekend. I will be watching it from the homestead.
Do you have Spectrum?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard about that. You know, I've got like I don't know, man. I'm not a real technological guy. We got apps now. We got direct apps and Spectrum apps and whatever apps you can get. I don't even know.
So I guess you're not going to break Buddy Davidson's record of consecutive football games. I did a story on Buddy, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, and just absolutely loved him and his love for Auburn football. But what is your plan on Saturday?
But didn't Buddy go like 600 or 800?
I think yes, I think it was maybe.
I mean, I would have to live to be 104, I think, to get this record. So I'm giving up before I start. I don't know. I'm still immersed with I help coach, and you guys may know this. I help coach over at John Carroll High School in Birmingham. We're 2-0. Had a great win against Homewood 2 weeks ago. Beat Marbury last week, and we start region play this Thursday actually against Fairfield, and I coach the middle school as well. So I'm immersed with that. I don't even know what I'm doing the next day, but hopefully we're celebrating a couple of wins.
Hey, Stan, we need to talk quarterbacks at Auburn and Auburn's overall performance against UMass. Can you hang on through a break? You know this drill.
Sure.
All right. Stan White, former Auburn quarterback and broadcaster, is with us on Big Noon Sports, and we will continue our conversation right after this brief message.
Built to win.
Touchdown, Alabama!
Built for championships.
Throws intercepted, Alabama!
Built by Bama.
Alabama is still Alabama.
Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide welcome the Texas Longhorns to Tuscaloosa. Our coverage begins at 3 on your home for Alabama football.
Tide 100.9, presented by Birmingham Racecourse and Casino. I-459, exit 31. You can be a winner too.
Hey, Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
And our guest is Stan White, Auburn University quarterback and former broadcaster as well. Stan, I don't know if I could have drawn it up better than how quarterbacks played in their opener. You?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty impressive, really, both Alabama and Auburn. You know, I mean, now, clearly they weren't playing, you know, their competition will get harder, obviously. And this weekend it will. I'm looking forward to that Alabama-Texas game. But yes, I thought Peyton did well. Of course, Robbie Ashford had a really good package as well. We knew that he was going to be utilized. And, you know, Hugh Freeze had the history of being able to do that and do it successful, which is a little different. You know, usually you go with one guy in that position. And of course, Robbie had, what, 3 rushing touchdowns, I believe? And of course, you look across the island, and Milroe had first time ever, I think, with what, 5 total touchdowns, is that right? 2 passing, 3 rushing, or something like that, I saw. But they've had a few pretty good quarterbacks in recent history. I mean, it was a really good, you know, weekend and good start for them. Of course, it'll ratchet up more this weekend, but it was good for them. And Auburn, what I was impressed with is they got a handful of running backs that's pretty good, and they didn't see arguably the best one at all in Jarquez. So that's a good plus.
Stan, being a extremely successful quarterback yourself, can a 2 quarterback system work? You know, clearly Robbie Ashford needs to play. I mean, that's obvious. And Peyton Thorne, he should be the starter. But can it work?
Well, I think if they both bring different things to the table, which clearly they do. You know, Ashford is a really dynamic athlete. I mean, he's fast. You know, I mean, he's elusive. And I think the knock on him has been the ability to maybe read a defense and maybe the consistently being accurate. I don't know. You know, I thought his best game was against Alabama last year. Had some nice throws, but Thorne obviously has a lot of experience in a big time conference as well. So yes, it can if they both have different type of dynamics they bring to the game, and clearly both of them have different strengths that they can use, and also it just makes headaches for defensive coordinators if you can do that and it can and if it works. In this case, I believe it can because of their both both different strengths and perceived weaknesses.
Stan, there have been a lot of criticism over the past few years about Auburn's offensive line. Would you grade them? And again, as you just said a minute ago, it's a little different against UMass than it even would have been against Cal. And then once you get into the SEC, what's your grade for the O-line?
You know, I didn't watch every play. I would give it a solid B or A. It's really the competition is going to ratchet up, so it's hard to say. You know, they've got so many new players. I mean, you know, it's hard to recognize a lot of the names because they're new. And not that that's the nature of college football. It's not just Auburn. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, look at Colorado. I mean, it's so, you know, but what you got is you got the challenge. I mean, you hear Nick Saban and Hugh Freeze and every coach talk about this. The challenge is just keeping your roster and being able to, being able to get that chemistry in such a short period of time because everyone is new. And that happens everywhere. I mean, you got to continuously recruit your own players from leaving, and chemistry has to happen overnight, not over a 2 or 3 year period anymore. So when you're able to kind of catch that lightning in a bottle, so to speak, then you've got something pretty well, because believe me, I coach more at the high school level and so forth. That line position is the most important in all of football. And because there's no other position that requires five people doing their job. If one person, you know, four guys can do it phenomenally, but if one misses an assignment, then it blows the play up. I mean, you can have a receiver run the wrong route and still have a successful play. But if a lineman messes up one assignment out of the five, then there's a good chance that play is not going to be successful. So that's the key, is getting all those guys on the same page, the same blocking scheme and everything.
Stan, let's just get you to give us an overall grade on the other side of the ball, too, defensively. I thought Auburn looked pretty good over there, too.
They did. You know, they got a pick six. They scored on other. They scored on defense, which is always big. You know, I think their secondary is going to be their strength, and it was coming into the season. I think the most experience they've had was Simpson and James, and of course Kaufman had a good game as well. So yeah, they've. I think they look good. Now, like I said, it'll ratchet up more this weekend, and it'll continue to when it gets into SEC play. But I thought it was a good start for them. You know, it's these days, a lot of teams run similar things. I mean, you know, they run that spread style, the RPO style, spread them out, you know, basically throwing the ball in space. And so I thought they did a good job. And it's going to take, you know, communication is a factor on defense. I mean, you just got to communicate and you got to know where, you know, what your assignment is, and don't overplay your assignment.
Did you Stan, find yourself while you were watching the game every once in a while, make sure, oh, I got to look up, I got to see the next play. Was it difficult to just totally absolve yourself from calling every play?
You know, in a way it was, because I tend to watch football maybe a little different than most fans because of, you know, I played it and I was, you know, as soon as I got through playing the game, I went to the broadcasting. In fact, that was the first time I'd been in Auburn Stadium as a fan in the stands since 1994. And that was when I was playing with the Giants. I had an off weekend and I came back for an Auburn game. So it's been a long time since I've actually just stood and watched the game, you know, in the stands. So it's a little different. I'm a film junkie. I love watching film. I love it. I mean, I'll watch it 8 hours if you'll sit around with me and watch it. And you probably get tired of me watching film with me, because I'll go play by play. I'll spend 10 minutes on one play, looking at every position, looking at everything. And I just enjoy doing it. So, that's kind of the way I like watching football games. I overanalyze. And then if I see a play I like, you know, I'll clearly write it down. Say, well, I like that play. I'm going to put it in, you know, install that into our high school or our middle school scheme or whatever, you know.
Stan, for months, Matt and I have been comparing Auburn and Colorado, because of the infusion of players via the transfer portal into each program. I know you obviously were at Auburn and didn't get a chance to, watch Colorado live, but, your thoughts in, I'm sure you've read it and maybe had a chance to watch a replay, your thoughts on what Deion Sanders is doing at Colorado, and do you think it's fair to kind of compare Colorado and Auburn the way that Matt and I have presumptively been doing?
Well, I did not get a chance. I was very impressed with them winning that game. I mean, I understand. I didn't see any of it, but I understand it was a fantastic game, a very entertaining game. I think his son threw for about 500 yards, or maybe accounted for that. So, you know, clearly he's done a great job in a short period of time. And I don't know what their roster turnover was. I'm assuming it's 60 or 70 kids. I don't know. But I got the chance many years ago when Deion was playing with the Cowboys and I was with the Giants. We did, it was a charity thing, kind of a basketball charity game. And I got the chance to talk to him, and he's a fantastic person. He really is. I mean, he, you know, I was just a backup quarterback from, you know, Auburn, and this was prime time, and he made the point to include me on everything. And, you know, of course, back then, you know, Auburn and FSU played yearly. And so we had some kinship there, but, fantastic guy, done a great job. Is he flamboyant? I guess. Yeah, sure. He promotes the program. And he's done a great job. I don't know comparison wise. I mean, they're about to join the Big 12, right? And I mean, TCU defending runner up, I guess. I don't know what TCU had coming back, so I have no idea. I know they lost their quarterback, but he did a great job nonetheless. It was a phenomenal win for him, and now they got to sustain it. I mean, it's, you know, win that first one, enjoy it. Now you got to go out there and play again.
Stan, were there any other games, particularly around the SEC, maybe North Carolina beating South Carolina, or how about LSU beating Florida State? Throw some light on that one for a second.
Ooh, I watched that one. You mean FSU beating Florida State? FSU beating LSU. Man, I tell you what, I was a little surprised by that. That was just FSU just manhandled LSU in that second half. I mean, it was just it was all it was to it. I thought LSU would win that game, but FSU made a believer out of me. I mean, they're good. I mean, they're really good. And then, of course, I watched part of the South Carolina-North Carolina game late. North Carolina just blew it away later on, and it was a good game for a while. And I'll tell you the most recent one, it didn't involve an SEC school, but I watched Duke just manhandle Clemson last night. I mean, that was an impressive win by Elko. I mean, that, you know, that little quarterback for them just had a day. And of course, Dabo, I just told you, they struggled a little bit. I mean, that was bad. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad on Duke's part. It was bad on Clemson's part, obviously. But yeah, I guess the biggest, takeaway, you know, I mean, was it Colorado's win? LSU, you wouldn't really consider that an upset because there were two top 10 teams. And then, of course, Duke and Clemson. But yeah, I mean, what you're seeing to me is you're seeing some maybe non-traditional powers that are really, really starting to close that gap, if that makes sense, on some teams.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fascinating first weekend of college football. But getting back to Auburn, based on what you saw on Saturday, have your expectations for this team changed at all?
I was impressed more with Auburn was they didn't go out there and, you know what, they didn't do I didn't see this game. They didn't do what Florida did, you know, wearing the same number, a lot of silly penalties, first game penalties that we just kind of beat yourself. And they didn't have that happen. They didn't have a lot of misalignments. They didn't have a lot of jumping offside. So it was a clean game in that respect. And that's what I was impressed more than anything is they played fast. They played, they didn't seem to be out of place a lot of times. And they didn't have a lot of your first game, first, you know, coaching staff, type of penalties where you just got, it wasn't sloppy. So it was very clean. And that's what I was impressed more than anything.
Stan, I'm sure you've taken a lot of cross-continental trips, particularly in the NFL, but Auburn going to California, is travel a thing?
You know, you just got to weigh the time zones. The furthest trip I made, I believe, was Austin, Texas. We played there at Texas my sophomore year. From what I remember, I think that's the furthest west we went. And so, yeah, I mean, you just gotta, I'm assuming they're going out on Friday. But yeah, it's just one of those things where you just gotta, get right used to the time zone. And it's a night game. It's a late night game. Luckily, it's a night, more of a later game as opposed to a very early in the morning. That can kind of hurt you more than anything because you just gotta get used to the time zone. But I think they'll be fine. You know, the nutritionist now, and they have that down to an art.
No kidding. Hey, great stuff as always, Dan. Enjoy your weekend. Just hanging around with a remote in your hand. That'll be different for seven or eight, three, four decades. I don't know how long it's been. Enjoy.
I enjoy it, guys. My pleasure, guys. Take care anytime.
You bet. You're right.
Thank you, Stan.
Dan White, when we get back, we are going to wrap up yet this edition of Big Noon Sports. Hang on for it.
Go inside the Alabama Crimson Tide with the Gary Harris Show.
Coming up on the Wednesday edition of the Gary Harris Show on Tide 100.9 FM, we'll talk plenty of SEC and college football. You know that's happening with Texas coming to Alabama this weekend. But also, we'll have the NASCAR report with Matt Coulter, your phone calls as well. All that and more on the Gary Harris Show.
Catch the Gary Harris Show Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny this afternoon, the high today 91. Fair tonight with the low at 71. Tomorrow and Thursday, partially sunny both days. The chance of widely scattered, mostly afternoon and evening, showers and thunderstorms. Highs between 88 and 91. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 92 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Top of the hour. Appreciate you folks dialing us in today. You can always call us and listen online as well. Our phone number is 205-342-9904, bignoonsports.com, at Big Noon Sports. Hey, Justin, you and I were able to talk a little bit about the Alabama game this past Saturday night and into Sunday morning. As we did the post-game show right there on a flagship station, Tide 100.9. But, let's go over that again. Justin Jones' perspective on Alabama's big win.
Yeah, I think I have to be just very nitpicky. There was two things that I saw that really concerned me. One being, I think Jalen Milroe played excellent. I think the only issue was I thought he held onto the ball too long when he was standing in the pocket. I think he needs to make his reads and his adjustments a little bit faster. I saw that he liked to stare down the receiver. You'd see him make one or two reads, and then once he was set, he was set. And he would stare down his one receiver until he let go of the ball. And then similarly on offense, the running backs we had been talking about all offseason that were supposed to be the studs, have no issues, no worries about. They seemed a little slow to start, and I think that has to go to the offensive line in that their run blocking was, I don't think, up to the standard that we were expecting. The pass blocking looked great. Just the run and the push off the line on those run plays and creating gaps for our running backs seemed to be missing.
What was your biggest surprise that you saw on Saturday?
I think the defense. I was very surprised by a lot of the younger players, Caleb Downs, the transfer, Jalen Key. I was surprised to see Tresman Marshall starting at middle linebacker. I know we were dealing with some bumps and bruises there, some injuries at the position, but I thought he played great, and I thought all along I was kind of a fan of his. I thought just the field of work that he put together at Georgia was going to play very well into this Alabama defense. But the young guys for sure. I also was surprised. We had been talking about wide receiver drops. I can't remember when. I think it was in the second or third quarter. There was like a corner route that was, maybe it was to Isaiah Bond, and it was bobbled a little bit and then finally brought in. I was like, oh, we're seeing improvement. That wasn't a drop ball. And so I was happy to see that. But really, yeah, just surprised by the young players and the way that they were able to go out there and kind of seemed like they picked up pretty quick. Like they didn't really need to settle into the game.
Did you get any word on what happened with Brooks? Is that No, no, we talked about it Saturday night, Sunday morning. But I also wanted to ask you guys, why didn't Jarquez Hunter play? Jarquez.
I've not heard anything on Brooks. I did hear Malachi Moore and the DBs were going to be okay. I think Saban said day-to-day, so we'll probably see them play this Saturday. I don't know about Jarquez Hunter, though. Maybe they're still kind of dealing out that punishment from the offseason stuff.
And Justin, your thoughts on the running back group as a whole?
Yeah, I think the running back – that's kind of what I was saying. I think we had kind of set them aside because we were so confident in them. I think it's just related to the O-line and the pass blocking. They all seem like downhill runners, and they're very fast. And with the play from Milrow that we saw, though, we might not even need – of course we need running backs, but we might not even need running backs. We'll just throw in our three quarterbacks, all have a rushing touchdown, and we'll just run some crazy sets out of the backfield.
You guys checked out the Associated Press poll just released a little while ago. No change in the top four. Florida State jumps up three. They're now fifth. By the way, the top four, Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, and Ohio State. Man, Ohio State had a little trouble, didn't they? 23-3 over Indiana. Shame on Indiana and you Big Ten people for not filling up your stadium.
Ohio State did not look good, Matt. I saw that game, and they have big-time issues on the offensive line and at quarterback, and they really struggled against an Indiana team that is pretty stout, but nonetheless, I was surprised that the Buckeyes didn't win that more handily.
I'm going to throw a lot of that on the Hoosiers. I think they had a great game plan and played very well. And that, to me, looked like at least a bowl-eligible team. Against one weekend, Matt, be quiet. All right, Penn State is 7. USC is 6. They stay. Penn State stays at number 7. Washington, the Huskies go up 3. They're 8th. Tennessee goes up 1. They're 9th. Joe Milton, Lars, what do you think?
Look good. Look good. He's an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, he looked fantastic. Don't think they're going to forget Hooker anytime soon, but, man, he certainly showed a lot of razzle-dazzle. Texas goes up 2. They are now 10th. And then you got Notre Dame, Utah, Oregon. LSU drops 9 to number 14. Then you got K-State, UNC up 4 at 16. Oklahoma, yeah, I know it's an opener, it's a cupcake, but man, they rolled up did they score 80? No, it was Oregon that scored 81, but Oklahoma wasn't too far behind. Oregon State remained the same, 18. Wisconsin is 19th, they're up 2. Ole Miss up 2 to 20th, and Clemson drops 12 to 21st, and then rounding it out is Tulane, Texas A&M, Duke, and Colorado are now in the top 25. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. They both beat ranked teams.
Lars, I have a favor to ask of you. I need your Cornhuskers to go in there and humble Coach Prime, because I think they're taking it a little too far, and I think that the Cornhuskers have a chance to beat them.
Dude. They don't have a chance. They will beat them. I mean, I'm just telling you, like, it's a perfect setup for Nebraska. You have to understand, in the Midwest, Nebraska, Colorado is the equivalent of Alabama, Auburn. It is two schools that absolutely despise one another. And, Colorado has always, I don't know, they've sort of, they have the little brother syndrome that Auburn does to Alabama, and I think Big Brother is going to come in and tell them, you know, who's in charge, because the overreaction to Colorado, Matt, has just been off the charts, and you know, there's just not enough body of work. There's not a great enough body of work to you know, suddenly anoint Colorado as a national power. Yes, they have talent. Yes, they have a dynamic quarterback. Yes, they have maybe a Heisman Trophy candidate worthy defensive back slash wide receiver. But it's going to come down to line play, smash mouth, and Nebraska's quarterback, Jeff Sims, transfer from Georgia Tech, clearly has issues throwing the ball, but the guy can run, and Nebraska's going to run the option, going to run fullback trap, I mean, going to run the eye back. It's going to be old school. It's old school versus new school, and we'll see what happens. But yes, I think the Huskers will take care of business.
You think Boulder's going to be all jacked up on Mountain Dew?
Yeah.
Man.
The governor came out. So the last few times that Nebraska has played in Boulder, the entire stadium has been red. Yeah. And the governor of Colorado came out pleading with Colorado fans not to sell their tickets to Nebraska fans. And he even said, if you do, we know who you are and we'll track you down.
that's always kind of bothered me and left it just so much.
I mean,
funny.
Come on.
Unless you're going to get an 84 Riviera out of it. All right, Lars, let's wrap this one up, put a bow on it, and vow to do it again in 22 hours tomorrow. Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, will be our guest. Lars, have a great day. You too, Justin.
If you're a homeowner or